The third Aliyah of Parshas Tetzaveh tells us about the Me'il and begins by telling us that the hole at the top should have a binding around it, a Ma'is Oreg, and ends with the words here, this Pasuk, Lo Yikarea, which the Gemara in Maseches Yuma and Daf Ayin Beis Amud Aleph understands to be a lav, to be a prohibition with Malkus. And one could have thought that perhaps it means just that the structure should be such that it should be protected, that it doesn't rip on its own. So apparently this is because it doesn't say shelo yukareya, but rather lo yukareya. It makes it sound as if it is indeed a prohibition. And the Tshuvas Beis Yitzchak in Yeridei and Chilik Beis and Simon Kuf Beis points out further that it's actually a passive language, which increases it, perhaps means that it includes even if it happens causationally through grama. We read also about the pamonim, about the bells that are attached to the hem of the me'il, and the language of the pasuk here is v'nishma kolo b'vo'u el ha'kodesh l'fnei Hashem uvitzeso v'lo yamus, and his sound will be heard and he won't die. What's the concern that he might die? Rashi explains as a reference to him otherwise being mechusar begadim, that he'd be lacking in the big dekahuna. The Ramban argues on this, saying this isn't the right place here to mention that. And rather, the reference is similar to what we find with Achashverosh and Esther, that if one is going to approach the king, there needs to be a request for permission. And so too, for the Kohen Gadol to approach, he needs to make a sound, he needs to ask for permission. The Yerushalmi in the 7th parak of Yuma has an additional component here that v'nishma kolo yichaper al kol ha-horeg nefesh b'shogeg, that this comes to atone for one who kills b'shogeg. There's a lot that needs to be figured out about that, including why it mentions kol here, the voice of the one who is a murderer inadvertently. The Torah Tumimah suggests that it's a reference to Cain, where we find the language of Kol Dmei Achicha Tzoakim, the voice of the blood of your brother is screaming out, and therefore it's meant to connect the two. Perhaps it could also be a reference to the idea of a Malbim Bnei Chaveru Barabim, who is connected to Rotzeach in the sense of it's Ki'ilu Shafach Damav, and therefore perhaps there needs to be a Kapara in terms of the increased sensitivity that is displayed here through Derech Eretz. Even if we're talking about literal Ritzicha B'Shogeg, Riv Gifter, in his Pirkei Torah, is quoted as connecting this to the Gemara Psachim Adaf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, which derives from here that one shouldn't enter into even his own house suddenly, and therefore this is a lesson in Derech Eretz, and that's also relevant to the Ritzach B'Shogeg, because the one who kills B'Shogeg is careless, doesn't have a sufficient sensitivity to the Tzelem Elokim, and anything that enhances the Derech Eretz, the respect that people have for each other, is a kapara, is a gesture in the direction of greater dignity, and therefore this is an atonement for the lack of sensitivity that could result in a Ritzicha V'Shogeg. He also adds that the idea of V'Nishma Kolo is to suggest that when it comes to big people, every action has an impact, has some kind of a sound, not necessarily a loud sound, but at least a faint sound, and that's what's reflected here, that there is some impact to everything that a significant person does. In Pasuk Lamed Zayin, we read about the Psil Techeles. Rav Moshe Feinstein comments about Techeles in general, how it represents the need to progress incrementally in Avodas Hashem. The Gemara tells us that Techeles is significant because it's the color of the ocean, and that is the color of the sky, which is in turn the color of the Kisei HaKavod, and it's meant to convey a process of going one step at a time. So that is indeed crucial, but at the same time, sometimes there are also big steps, as indicated by Kodesh Lashem, and after that, there's still a need to continue to keep growing, and that's how he understands the imagery here. Pasuk Lamed Ches tells us about the tzitz, v'haya al mitzvah tamid. The Gemara Masechet Shabbos and Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph tells us that you see from here that one has to check your tefillin all the time. A kal v'chomer from the tzitz, the Gemara understands that one has to always have his intention focused on the tzitz from this pasuk, and if the tzitz only mentions God's name once, so tefillin that has it many times, all the more so has an intense obligation to be constantly aware of it. Tosfos Masechet Yoma Daf Ches Amud Aleph questions that relationship, because tefillin Shem Hashem is covered up. It's hard to imagine that we actually assume that the kedusha of tefillin is actually greater than that of the tzitz, which has God's name exposed. And Tosfos assumes that this isn't an actual limud, and this is rather a din drabanan. Many Rishonim point out now, when it comes to tefillin, the actual prohibition is schok and kalas rosh. It's really joking around and having a attitude that is overtly disrespectful while wearing tefillin. But simple hasach hadas, that's probably a prohibition midrabanan. And for those purposes, indeed, the tzitz is indeed more chomer than tefillin. Regarding the meal that we read about in this aliyah, the Gemara tells us that it's mechaper on Lashon Hara, and the Kli Yakar has an interesting comparison, comparing it to the ocean. Just like the yam doesn't breach its boundaries, so too the mouth also shouldn't breach its boundaries. And that seems to be somewhat of a surprising association. And perhaps the point is that just like water is a necessary force but can also be destructive when harnessed the wrong way, so too speech is a absolutely necessary tool but also can be destructive when given a lack of restraint and discipline. And therefore there is a comparison between the two, that water, when it doesn't breach its boundaries, is useful and life-sustaining, and so too speech should be perceived the same way. Regarding the association of the me'il in being mechaper for Lashon Hara, with Schneer Cutler, and a drasha in which he suggested that it had to do with the tcheles, and as we noted before, the connection between tcheles and the ultimate association with the kiseh hakavod, and how that is displayed in a incremental fashion, going to the yam, then to the shamayim, then to the kiseh hakavod. So Rav Schneer Cutler suggested that the problem with Lashon Hara is it's too narrow a focus. One zooms in on a specific detail and neglects to see the big picture. But if one would take the much larger perspective and see the whole picture, one would realize that they're not giving the person a fair treatment and would understand that they have to reconsider. And therefore, the message of the tcheles, which requires one to take a much broader view and see how it ultimately leads to the kiseh hakavod, is the same kind of attitude that one needs to take in order to be fair to their subject and avoid lashon hara, and therefore it is effective as a kapara. When it comes to the idea of a kapara for lashon hara, so we're more familiar with the idea that negayim, that saras, is a kapara for lashon hara. So it's noteworthy that we have both saras and the me'il, and the Gemara addresses that question and says there's actually two types, that if a honey masav, if your lashon hara actually had an impact and caused people to fight, so that's when saras is necessary, and if lo a honey masav, if it wasn't effective, didn't actually have a negative impact, so then it's the me'il that is necessary to be mechaper just on the avera of speech. And this distinction between two different types of lashon hara in terms of the impact is a very practical one. And that was the subject of a major machlokas between the Chafetz Chaim and Rabbi Saul Salanter regarding the need to ask for mechila when one speaks lashon hara about another, and the general obligation of tshuva when it comes to lashon hara. The Chafetz Chaim was quoted as saying that one who speaks lashon hara about someone else who doesn't know that he did so, nonetheless, the speaker of lashon hara has to ask for a mechila. And Rabbi Saul Salanter was very opposed to this and reportedly refused to give a haskama to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim because of that, saying that to tell this individual about the lashon hara he wasn't aware of, that would be a violation of Onas Tvarim. So the Chafetz Chaim's position that one needs to ask for a mechila even if the victim didn't know about it was considered to be highly controversial, and indeed many poskim ruled against it. But it's important to appreciate that the Chafetz Chaim himself did draw a distinction along these lines, that he didn't write that any time someone speaks lashon hara about someone else, they need to tell them about it and ask for mechila. But he wrote that this is only true if the lashon hara he spoke actually inflicted some damage, did some harm. In that case, he has to tell them about it and ask for mechila. But if it didn't actually have an effect, if similar to the language of the Gemara, lo ahani masav, so then he doesn't have to tell him, and he shouldn't tell him. Indeed, that would hurt his feelings. But he still has to do tshuva, and he has to do a internal kapara, similar to the kapara one would do for any avera on Yom Kippur and the like. So that's similar to this distinction that we find in the Gemara here, that there's two impacts of Lashon Hara. There's the potential negative impact on the victim, and there is also the impact that it has on the speaker, which still requires an atonement. And in that case, that's consistent with the explanation that Rav Schneer gave, that the kapara that comes with the meal is a shift in perspective, and that addresses the internal attitude of the speaker and his need to reorient his way of thinking. This is all very valuable for us, because if this is the method by which the Big Day Kahuna bring about a kapara, so even Bizman Hazeh, when we don't actually have the Big Day Kahuna, but we're able to study about them and to fulfill the value through learning, as we find the concept applied to Kachim, but especially when it comes to the notion of a kapara, if the kapara is meant to focus our perspectives and to reorient the way we think about things, so that's something that can be accomplished through learning about these topics as well. And it's our good fortune then that we can study these concepts and indeed have them bring about that effect, that they can affect a kapara for us in these areas, such as speaking Lashon Hara and the mental perspective that leads to that avera in the first place.